optional module is focused on partnering with our Office of Innovation and Business Development on building capacity and helping to improve the efficiency of products through the pipeline, particularly the preclinical stages. And so we had a great conversation last year in our breakout session about the different supports and activities in this area. And the main feedback was about building the internal capacity and balancing internal versus external needs and capacity, working with CROs as needed. And an additional piece to that was funding. So Brendan O'Leary, in his remarks in the EAC report, has really done a nice job of talking about how we have been outsourcing projects when appropriate and agreed that there's lots of expertise in the CRO community for preclinical studies. In the funding area, we've continued or started some several pilot programs to support proof of concept work. I mentioned elsewhere in my comments here our SPARC, or Small Pilot and Research Knowledge Program, which provides up to $10,000 for some core use for additional small studies, as well as the IND Launch Program, which is funding projects in the 25 to 50K range. So as far as, you know, therapeutic candidates, there are two things that have come out of UMass research and IP that have entered first in human trials in 2017. Very exciting about that. Brendan will talk about that a little bit more during the meeting next week. We discussed about working with entrepreneurs in the local community and VC financing, and Brendan talks a little bit more about that as well. He's been very successful in pulling in entrepreneurs who are perhaps looking for their next opportunity to work with our faculty or to provide advice about a particular program under development. And so that's been working very well. As far as larger funding opportunities, some work is in progress to fund these GMP manufacturing, the larger GLP IND enabling studies in the preclinical space, as well as first in human studies. The Mastery Speedy Committee, which is really the strategic product development group, which has been we've been working on for a long time, and now are finally this fall going to have our first meeting. This will be made up of faculty experts here at UMass across the different campuses, working with a number of experts that Brendan has really done a fabulous job of getting people with diverse expertise to be on this committee, which will be coming together probably quarterly to review and learn about some of the technologies that are coming out of the university, and talking about what might be needed next for this study, who might this group talk to, etc. Our mastery education initiatives continue to do quite well. Over the summer, there was an event, Dueling for Dollars, where Brendan's office pulled together a panel with executives from Big Pharma, biotech, VC, and as well as a person from a family office, where they talked about the types of things that they invest in. And then we had faculty pitch some of their concepts, and then we tried to have the group collectively figure out what type of opportunity might be best suited for what type of investment partner. So that was a great event. We had a good turnout for that. And there's more programming that's been being planned for the upcoming year. I will say that M2D2 coming to Worcester is another great opportunity to bring in additional educational programming. We have a strong partnership with Johnson & Johnson and J-Labs. And as part of that, they have educational programming that they're going to be running increasingly so here at the Worcester campus. So we've got one program scheduled for October on the concept of herding cats in the medical device and business development, what was involved to kind of put together a team, manage all the different elements of that team, and keep a project moving forward. It's just one example of the type of programming we'll be doing in combination with J&J and M2D2. So I think we have the I-Corps program, which is also going to be gearing up over the next few months, also talking about entrepreneurship and commercialization and working with the inventors to really make sure that what they're developing is answering or solving a real problem in the community rather than just building something and hoping that people will come and think it's a neat innovation. So the Innovation and Business Development Office, which is headed by Brendan O'Leary, just to recap, has several three-part mission. One is to increase and diversify private sector funding. One is to accelerate the translation of research discoveries into human health advances. And then the third is to raise awareness of UMass Medical School with private sector partners. Because even though we are not that far from the Boston-Cambridge area, for many folks, we are might as well be in Siberia. And the awareness of all the great work and faculty out here can sometimes be a struggle. One of the things Brennan's going to talk about when it comes to the challenges is some staffing turnover in the office, which has hampered some of the activities lately, but we'll talk about that more in the session. The internal translational development program, as far as, you know, funding is always an issue, and also trying to figure out ways to identify projects and make sure that they're funded appropriately is an issue. Another current challenge has to do with state ethics law and how that might impact on different partnering activities. All right, one of the components that we're going to be talking about is the clinical research support infrastructure led by Margaret Kozel. And, you know, her slides really talk about all the disparate pieces of the CTSA that have to do with clinical research. I think anyone who's involved in a CTSA knows that the clinical research pieces of the puzzle are spread across different cores, and sometimes it can be a real mishmash trying to keep it all straight. Margaret likes to think of it as this cycle where we've got the design phase, which involves working with our bird, working with the informatics tools and community engagement on feasibility assessments, working with a newly created protocol review committee to make sure that studies are appropriately designed and are ethical and are really well designed, as well as electronic tools like I2B2 and Trinetics. Then the studies, of course, once they're designed, move into the startup phase where the regulatory, the contracting and budget, the IRB, and the clinical trial management system all kick in. Once a trial is started, the recruitment phase is where we move next. So working with our volunteer databases, study match, working with the research tools in EPIC to enable studies to recruit, the actual conduct of the study itself. So the clinical research center here, the pharmacy, again, using some of the new informatics tools such as EPIC and our clinical trial management system to make sure that the study is conducted in all the appropriate ways. And once the study completes itself, you know, the learning phase, so the QA, QI, all the different kinds of teaching back to the people who have participated in the trial to let them know why their participation is so valuable and what we've learned through this study, and then education about to community members as well as the clinicians and others to make sure that they're using this new evidence and data to inform their care in the best way possible. So in some of the comments from last year, there was a point about the lack of dedicated inpatient space. Here it's very challenging due to space limitations in the medical center and the low volume of studies that require really dedicated inpatient support. So we're not moving in that direction at the current time, and Margaret can talk about that more. There was some discussion about the electronic consent, and we are using e-consents for at least one study, and we're getting good feedback on that, and so we're looking to expand those efforts going forward. Of course, I've mentioned other parts about EPIC and its go-live on October 1st, and we're really working to how recruiting is going to work in EPIC, so we're generating some test data, and it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out going forward. There was also some questions about the number of NIH versus industry trials that we're supporting. And in Encore, the clinical trial management system that's going live, we currently have 90 out of our 315 studies have a federal funding source. And so we'll be able to collect and track the information in a much better way going forward. So in the clinical research arena, some of the questions that we had for this year's panel has to do with how do we operationalize national initiatives. You know, people familiar with the CTSAs have heard about the trial innovation networks and the TICs and RICs. How are they working in reality at all of your different sites? We would love to know. How do you find interfacing with these the national coordinating centers. We haven't been interacting with them all that much yet, though we've participated in many of the phone calls. We're still trying to find the right study and trying to get clear guidance on what's the appropriate type of study that really could benefit from some of these trial innovation network and other related infrastructure that's being put together. The smart IRB, the single IRB, you know, is another activity that's getting a lot of attention and a big push right now. We'd love to know, hear from some of our peers about how this is being rolled out at your sites. In addition, with Epic going live, the use of Epic for research, given that it's a proprietary platform, is a big question, and we'd love to, again, touch base and hear from you about how you're working with Epic on different research applications, and as well as the idea of how do we recruit for studies regionally, and is there an appetite for trying to work with other CTSAs to do things like that. We've had some discussions with the pediatric groups led by Tufts about recruiting regionally, and there are some efforts in that area, but of course we could always do more. And another, you know, big thing that's on the horizon is all the changes to the human subjects research guidelines as the new common rule rollout over the next year or two, and how we do our clinical research and our IRB and in the face of all those new regulations. So you can anticipate hearing about some of those changes and challenges and how we're thinking about that, and how we'd love to get your feedback on that as well. Thank you for sticking with us throughout all our different sections of the CTSA. I hope this has been a useful tool for you to help to digest and think about some of the progress that we've made over the past year and some of the issues that we would like to discuss with you next week. We really, like I said at the beginning, look forward to meeting with you. It's always a great time to get feedback and hear about what other people are doing in a very creative and open environment.